I'll start. My name is Nicholas Sylvester, and I'm with my partner, Terrell Lewis, and we are interviewing Principal Kevin Dougherty over the phone on Tuesday, July 19th. Mr. Dougherty, do you give us permission to record and make public this oral history?
Yes.
Okay. And as a reminder, you do not have to answer any question that makes you uncomfortable.
Okay.
So we'll start by some basic, as much basic information as you're willing to share. So your name?
Kevin Dougherty.
Your age?
K-E-V-I-N-D-O-U-G-H-E-R-T-Y.
Okay. Your age?
I am 41.
Occupation?
I am an educator. I'm currently a principal of a high school, middle school and high school.
Neighborhood?
Where I work or?
Where you live.
Where I live. East Flatbush, Brooklyn.
Okay. Place of origin?
Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Ethnic identity?
Human. I am considered white, and my mom's family is originally from Italy, and my dad's family is originally from Ireland.
Okay. All right, Terrell.
All right, you want me to ask the first question?
Yep.
So, okay, tell me about your journey to MBK.
A journey to MBK. When I got to Elmont, there was a need to create a mentoring program for some of our young men. So when I first got here, it was evident that some of the young men were accounting for a large number of the behavioral incidents as well as the suspensions. So we decided, I'm a big believer that when given the opportunity and given the resources that anybody can achieve and everybody can be great in their own way. And I think that it's just a matter of access and resources usually and supports to help people to get there. So I think it's something that, there was definitely a need when I got here looking at the data and looking at just the workings of the building. So we started the Men of Elmont program to help mentor some of our boys who needed more support and needed more resources in order to be successful. So, we re-ran with that. We started that program my second year here. And we just built that over the next couple of years. Dr. Alston came, and he was actually coming in order to see the school, but also to do like a college essay class, so to speak, or a talk on writing great college essays. So when he was here, I actually brought him to see one of our Men of Elmont meetings. And he was blown away. So he was really interested in, getting us to be part of the My Brother's Keeper conference that year, as well as become, so he wanted us to present, but he also wanted to be a participating member in the organization at the state level. So he was really impressed by the work we were doing and wanted us to participate in that. And this was also coming out of his visit, was also out of the fact that we had been named as like one of the 10 most successful schools in New York State for educating young men of color. So he did that visit, was like, hey, I want you to opt. I had at the board level and the superintendent level, we had also talked with the board president and the superintendent at the time, Dr. Ferry, about potentially joining the My Brother's Keeper program because of the resources that it offers. So that was something that we were in meetings and discussions with Dr. Ferry, and they were looking at, having us join that joining us, the My Brother's Keeper program, in order to get access to more resources. Then the COVID hit, you know, obviously we went remote. He came to visit in 2019, I believe. And then 2020, we obviously had COVID, so we didn't get to actually present at the conference. But then we, you know, as when we came back last year, those talks resumed in terms of joining My Brother's Keeper. And that was something Dr. Gastani and our board president, Mr. Jaime, had wanted to happen. So that was something that, you know, they decided that that was the route we were going to go and that we were going to partner with the elementary district in doing so. And that was how we ended up with My Brother's Keeper.
Okay. And like when you joined, how did you think you could impact the community with MBK services?
So I think I think we already had the services in place. I think we were already, you know, doing the work, which is why Dr. Alston wanted us to present at the conference. But obviously this was going to give us a network. The two big things, I think, is like building a network with other communities as well as resources, right? So there is some money that we get out of this, and there are different opportunities that we get out of this in terms of mentoring, in terms of going to, you know, the conference and doing some leadership development for you all that otherwise we wouldn't have access to. So I do think that, you know, in terms of doing a lot of the work, we were already doing it and we were already making a big difference, but this just adds another layer of resources and access to other communities and conferences that otherwise we wouldn't have had.
Okay, thank you. So
yep.
The next question we have for you is, describe the impact of MBK on your community.
So I think it's a positive one. I think that, you know, the work we were doing with Men of Elmont was already happening. So I think that I'm a big believer that doing the work, there's no shortcut to doing the work, right? And that goes for pretty much everything. That it really takes, you know, a lot of grunt work and just, you know, grinding in order to get the job done. And that's something that, you know, when my neighbor the other day, I was sweeping up my front patio area in Brooklyn, and he came by. He's actually doing some construction on the house next to us, and he was like, people think it, he just saw me sweeping, and he came out of his car. I was like, people think it's smoke and mirrors, but it's all just dust and broomsticks. You know, and I think that's a phrase that I'll carry with me, you know, probably till I die now, because it's really, really true, and it's a very succinct way to put it, of like, it's, you know, there's no secret to success. It's just hard work and putting in the time. So I think that we were already grinding and doing the work on a base level, but I think that having the access to other communities and connecting our young men with other communities and being able to talk to other boys and young men about different issues that are going on, as well as to hear other people's stories, as well as have access to other guest speakers and potential trips and different things, is obviously will have a positive impact. So I think that ultimately it does have a positive impact and will down the road once we get the access to the resources. But I think it's just the more voices and the more of a web that you have supporting young people, the better the opportunities and the better the supports are, and in case you know, the kids ever need to fall back onto something.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
And what societal issues do the young men of color serve face?
Say it again?
Yeah, I know I said that a little weird. What societal issues do the young men of color you serve face?
So, I mean, I think they face the same issues that all young men of color do in America. You know, just by having black or brown skin in America, that defines for some people, you know, some people define a person by that and will judge a person based off of that. And I think that that's something that regardless of where your family comes from or regardless of who you are as a person, that initial reaction is going to be there from some folks, regardless. So, and that plays into every aspect of life in some ways, be it from safety and public safety, working with police, be it when you're interviewing for a job and the name at the top of a resume happens to be a little bit different than names that people have been exposed to. Just from hairstyles and stuff, when people walk in with locks and, certain people aren't used to that, they have their own assumptions as to what it means when you have locks. And I think that's those stereotypes and that form of racism and and colorism, and talking to my son's of mixed race, and he talks about kids making fun of him because he's not black enough, he's not dark enough, and all that stuff. Just going through it with and seeing that like we're basing, like what does that even mean in terms of like shades of skin color? So I think that life is hard in general, but when you throw other aspects on top of that, of different challenges that people face, I think most of our students aren't living in an impoverished community, which is a big difference. Most of my career was spent in impoverished communities working with students of color and young men of color. So I think that's one aspect that our community, we have some students living in poverty, but not on the mass level that, I'm typically used to. So I think that's actually something that a lot of our students aren't facing. It's mostly working class folks, so they have that to fall back on and different resources that come from that. But I think otherwise students are facing the same stereotypes and racism and other things that everybody's facing, that all students of color are facing, mainly Black and Latino students. And then I think on top of that, it's just skills that everybody needs as well, like regardless whether you're white, Black, Asian, Latino, like whatever it is, like you need skills in general, and you need people to help you with those skills. So like, how to interview for a job, how to tie a tie, how to do this, how to do that, like basic skills that, somebody has to explicitly teach you. It doesn't just come naturally, regardless of where you come from. Did that answer the question?
Yeah, that was a really good answer. Oh, Nick, I think you do the next question. Oh, wait. No. My bad. What steps are you taking to help with these issues?
So I think one is, I think we have to attack it from multiple aspects. I think we're doing a lot of work with the students, obviously, and giving you guys the tools to educate you on different issues that you may not have faced yet. Some you have faced and or have heard from your families and different people in your lives, but try to give you guys some tools and even just a forum to discuss some of the frustrations and the confusions and just kind of general things that are on your mind, and give you that space to kind of discuss it and come up with, some solutions, or just talk it out, and at least make it feel like you're not alone in this experience, and that this is a shared experience that other people have also had, and that it's okay. It's not okay for the experience to be happening, but it's okay that you're feeling a certain way because of the experience, and then giving you some tools in order to overcome it. I think other thing that we're doing is raising awareness on these issues within the community, and within the larger community. So be it racism in sports, or be it racism with the police in the video series that we did, as well as the talk with the police around, the relationship between Black men and police officers. And then also, or just raising awareness on different topics through social media. I think that, we have to constantly shine a light on those issues in order to bring that out of the darkness and make people realize that this is a real thing and this is happening on a regular basis. And then I think the other part is working within the school community with the adults in the curriculum in order to make sure that we're addressing this head on and creating other spaces, that it's not just Men of Elmont, in our case, Leading Ladies, where this is a forum to have this discussion, but this is being discussed within the context of the classroom as well, and educating our staff on the way that, culture and background and race and religion and everything is brought into the classroom, and that we're educating human beings, and that is part of what makes each individual who they are. Is that we have to recognize that stuff of what everyone's bringing to the table, and then also how we incorporate that in our classrooms in terms of what's being taught. So how are we including multiple perspectives? How are we including the perspective of all people that were involved in the scenario, not just the victors or not just the people that wrote the story? And then also, how do you have those conversations and creating a safe space in which that can occur, and do that in a comfortable way, because not everybody's trained to do that. So I think it's really multifaceted, the way we have to approach stuff like this, and it's nuanced and complicated. But I think those are the things that we're doing.
Okay, thank you. And how do issues of today's youth differ from the issues youth of color face when you were younger?
So I think some of it's, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And the fact that, there's still plenty of people in this world that, to believe that people of color are a certain way, and they draw their stereotypes quickly just based off of, their own vision and what they see. Without real exposure, and that's really just a lack of exposure to people of color. I think the other part is that, there have been some changes, there's been positive changes in terms of race. I can't say that it's the same world that I grew up in, even in terms of what's on TV and what's in commercials and what's on, and even comedians what's able to be discussed, and then also what types of roles are Black people in, and, all that stuff has gotten better. I think knowing white people in my life, I think attitudes have changed to a degree. I think, growing up, I definitely heard more white people when I was in all white context, using racial slurs about different groups of people. And I would either have to correct them or just remove myself from the conversation. And so I feel like that's less. I don't know if it's still not underlying a lot. I still think there's a lot of underlying, microaggressions, and also subconscious racism that goes on. Other people don't actually realize that they're making a judgment, but they are, just based off of their experience. So I think obviously we had a Black president. There's things that make a markedly big impact on race relations and where we are. And even just, there's different parts, but there's so much that needs to get done still. And then you look at the data too, in terms of social mobility for Black men, which is less in terms of earnings and that sort of stuff than other racial groups. So, there's a lot that has improved, and I don't want to minimize that, but at the same time, there's a lot that still is the same in terms of, ceilings that are placed on people of color, on young men of color. The way the police, treat young men of color. It's a mixed bag. I can't say that it's all the way better, and I can't say that it's worse than what it was. I think cell phones have helped for the most part, because we're capturing different incidents that otherwise wouldn't be captured. And like the narrative would have been that somebody was reaching for a gun or something like that, and that's why the cop shot him. But I think that there's body cams and all this stuff. Like, I think all this is positive steps to kind of reveal the truth. I just think this is a step we have to get through. I do think that over time, you know, it'll continue to get less and less as you have more people interacting with each other and more exposure and realizing the human qualities of each individual person, but it's just the process. We need to speed up a little bit.
All right. Thank you for that. So the next question is...
Would you like me to repeat the question, or do you think you finished?
Yes, please. Sorry.
What obstacles / struggles have you encountered in your work?
So I think the... Like, in relation to kind of the Men of Elmont and My Brother's Keeper stuff, I think the biggest one is kind of like, why are you helping those kids? So I think that's the biggest, and that's been everywhere I've been in terms of doing this type of work. And my teaching career started with, where I was a special education teacher for students with emotional and behavioral disorders, they called it at the time. So the kids that really struggled with behavior and kind of, you know, were more likely to get involved in some of the disrespectful behaviors and kind of not really listening to what people had to say. You know, those were my kids, and they were kind of the kids that nobody else wanted or wanted to deal with. They wanted to be able to come in and teach their course without any interruptions, et cetera. In a similar capacity, I feel like when you're working with students who typically, you know, get in trouble or aren't the students who everybody that aren't like role model students, people are like, why are you putting your attention on those kids? We should be giving more attention to the kids that are doing the right thing, not the wrong thing. But the reality is, and there's a lot of research on this as well, is that when the kids that are doing the wrong things do the right things, the entire community actually gets better. And there's, you know, everybody improves from it. And then when we can engage students who are doing the right thing along with kids that aren't doing the right thing, you know, that becomes even more powerful in terms of the transformation that can happen within the community, right? So it's kind of common sense, but also, you know, there's research to back it up. And the biggest piece that I've always found is that people are like, well, why are you helping those kids? And why are you investing so much time in those kids? You know, and like, what are they doing there? And like, how are they, you know, giving students voices sometimes within a school context? It's like an oxymoron, but a lot of people who become educators, like people like controlled environments, you know, and when you start to give students more voice and less, some of the quote unquote control or perceived control is taken away from the educators, and the students are incorporated in decision making or just having their opinion heard, you know, people get scared by that and kind of feel insecure about giving people that microphone. So I think really kind of overcoming that, because they think like all hell is going to break loose if you allow few kids to speak their mind or kids to have a voice, then like, watch out, like, you know, it's just going to become a crazy place. So I think that's one of the biggest things, is kind of overcoming that, I think, and showing people that like, this is really a good thing and everybody's going to benefit from it in the long run. And that just takes time. I think that just takes time. You know, there's no shortcut. Again, it's just like, people have to see that this is going to be a quality program, that the kids are doing something meaningful and there's quality things coming out of it. So I think that's, you know, first and foremost. I think the other challenges I faced, you know, and this is not a sob story by any means, but like is that being a white male doing this work, people sometimes are like, who the hell are you? So I've gotten that multiple times from people within the Black community who will say things that like, who the hell are you to do this work? You know, and you actually have no idea what it's like to be a Black man, so you can't do this work. So I think that part for me, again, is like, just wait and see. Like, I just need you to trust that I have these students' best interests at heart. Obviously, I'm not a black man. There's no covering that up. But like I still think I can lead the conversations and have allow the space for the conversations to happen without necessarily without being a black man, that I can add some insight and help kids to get to a better place with it. But again, like I need people to see that that's been, you know, I've always been a white person that hangs out with, you know, a lot of circles, and I always was around a lot of people of color growing up, even like when in Philadelphia, I just was friends with everybody, and we had a fairly diverse school, and, you know, I would be with everybody. I played a lot of sports, which got me intermixing with people from all different types of backgrounds. So the, you know, it was that just kind of like the credibility too, and the overcoming some distrust within from some other people, mainly within the black community, to say like, hey, you know, he's a white person, but he can actually, we trust that he has our kids' best interest at heart, and just kind of giving people a way to see that too, like, listen, just give me some time, and I promise, like, you'll see who I am, and that will reveal itself. Other challenges is like resources and like, you know, going through a bureaucracy of public education and trying to get resources for programs that are making a big difference. So I think that, you know, when you're trying to get certain things accomplished, a lot of things have to get approved by a lot of different people in order to get it done. And some things are, you know, more popular than others, or, you know, people are very worried about the perceptions of what people are going to think with certain programs. So I think, you know, doing things in a way like trying to navigate those politics and those dynamics within from a community school board, you know, central administration vantage point, and trying to navigate that maze in order to just get kids resources that we need in order to run the program effectively. I think that's always a challenge. You know, and I would say those are the three biggest challenges that I've had in general.
Thank you. And if it has been, how has mentorship been transformative to you as a mentor?
Wait, repeat that.
If it has been, how has mentorship been transformative to you as a mentor? Has it been transformative?
I mean, that's really why I got into education, right? Like, I really enjoy kids, and I think that kids have a fresh perspective and a lot of positive energy, and I like being around that positive energy. So I think for me, it's kind of like I taught special education, I taught math, but like I could have been teaching English, social studies, science. Like for me, it didn't matter what I was teaching, the content. It was about the interaction with kids and, you know, being able to help kids learn, but also to see themselves for who they truly are. And I think that part, you know, is transformative in and of itself. It's kind of like the gift that keeps on giving, because there's always going to be a new perspective. There's always going to be something fresh to talk to kids about. They're always going to bring a new perspective to the conversation. And they're just going to always keep you kind of on your toes. And with adolescents in particular, like, you know, development is development. So adolescent's brain is the same now as it's been, you know, for years and years and years. You guys just have more access to information and social media and different things that are impacting that brain in a different way. And you know, things that, like, I used to have to look up an encyclopedia, you can like look up on your phone within seconds. So I think that part is different, but the basics of human development and adolescent development are all the same. And I think that it just continually teaches you new things and allows you to see humanity for what it is, good, bad, and otherwise. And I think it's just a great way to spend your time. It can be exhausting. It can be a lot because you're pouring yourself out to help others. But, you know, at the end of the day, it helps you to kind of like recharge and refill as well.
All right. Thank you for that. So
the next question we have is, as a leader in MBK, how have you navigated the nation's racial reckoning since 2020?
I think kind of head on. Like, I think that that's something that we, again, we don't shy away from real conversations. So I think that the, you know, making sure that we're having this dialogue both with the students and then also with the teachers around the racial reckoning is something that's really important. So we have a book club that we started. We actually started, I can send you guys a website. We created a blog with all different resources that we've used and different teaching resources that can be used in a classroom in order to, you know, help people to have this discussion and then also to provide, you know, with resources that they can use. We also have a blog with people reflecting on their experience with the conversations that we've had and the different books that we've read and the podcasts we've listened to. So I think addressing it with the teaching staff, we've also done PDs around this and community conversations. And then also I think the other piece is working with the students to, we did the police video, but we've also just kind of allowed for open discussion on these topics. So, and I think the biggest, one of the things that helps with that is kind of having you guys as leaders develop the topics that we're going to talk about, right? So like if it's something that you guys want to talk about and something that's on your mind that you're in touch with as a, you know, 16 through 18 year old, then it's something that we're going to bring to the table and incorporate into our discussion in some way. And I think by doing that, we make sure that it's relevant and it's fresh for you guys, because that's really why we're here. So I feel like we, to try to be proactive in terms of leading discussions on it, but then also providing solutions and supports, and just continually to grow and take people from where they are and to get them to be better a little bit each day. I think that's really kind of been our philosophy.
Thank you. What MBK intuited in, wait, question 11, right? What MBK intensive are you proudest of and why? So like what did MBK?
What's that?
I know, I butchered that so hard. What is it?
You skipped number 10.
Oh, so it was on number 10.
Yeah.
How did the pandemic impact your local MBK chapter, your experience in MBK?
It obviously, you know, it pushed us remote. So I've been keeping in touch with the students. We weren't officially an MBK community at that point, but like the, you know, it pushed the Men of Elmont remote, and something that when you're in touch with kids face to face is different in terms of being able to have discussions or check in with kids. I think the pandemic definitely going remote, you know, you're out of touch a little bit. You're not seeing kids on a daily basis. You're not able to have conversations with them. If they're not, you know, if you're calling their parents and they're not responding, or they're not responding to like remind messages, you're not able to kind of see what's going on with them and where their mental state is. I think for some kids, the pandemic was a really life-altering time. I think for everybody, kids and adults, it was a life-altering time. And I think that that affected people in different ways. And some people kind of withdrew from the regular societal norms. It was really hard to keep in touch with them. So I think that it affected us all greatly. I think we were able to keep our remote meetings going, but we definitely didn't have as many kids attending the remote meetings as we did in person, because I just think that dynamic is different and some people just don't want to be on video even longer when they were already on school video for, you know, 8 hours or whatever it was. And I understand that. So I think everyone had to kind of cope in their different ways and deal with the stress and the uncertainty and the anxiety of the pandemic in multiple ways. And that was okay. But I think being back in person, I think last year we started getting back to some norms, and then hopefully this year it'll be even better, where we can start to just be, you know, in the new normal, but not have to have such high levels of stress and anxiety.
All right. The next question is, what MBK initiative are you proudest of and why?
So I feel like it's a little bit difficult because we become like a new MBK school. So like a lot of the accomplishments we've done with Men of Elmont that I'm really proud of, like, weren't under the MBK banner per se. So dealing just with MBK in the last year since we became an MBK school, I actually think like the summit at Uniondale was a really positive thing. And we played a big role in putting that together. So I feel like that was a really great way to bring the communities on Long Island together to make that happen, to plan that out, and then to have our guys, we actually, Men of Elmont played a huge role in terms of facilitating a couple different discussion groups or breakout sessions. We also had, some guys on the panel. I was the mediator or the moderator for the panel discussion at the beginning. So I think Men of Elmont, and it made a big impact on Long Island MBK what we did and the way that we kind of ran the sessions that we did. But just putting that event together and bringing the various communities of Long Island together, I think, was very meaningful.
Thank you. And where do you see the most work needed to be done? Like in terms of MBK, they didn't like it.
Yeah.
Where do you feel like the most work needed to be done?
For us or for like the organization?
I think they mean both. Let's start with the organization.
So I think that from an organizational perspective, just a little more organization and I think like communication amongst everybody and kind of being on the same thread, I think that would be helpful. We do get emails and stuff, which is helpful, but I think just like regular updates or about what's going on and what's coming and that sort of thing would be helpful. I think from our standpoint, what would I change or kind of get to? I think more, I really want to kind of get into like college readiness and career readiness type stuff. So like tactile skills from financial literacy to how to interview for a job, to how to write a resume, to, if you want to be a college athlete, like what does that recruitment process look like and how to get your name out there. So really kind of like nuts and bolts of what it means to be an adult and to kind of work, and also building relationships where we could have internships, for our kids on a more regular basis. I think that would be really, really powerful to get not just discussions going and not just activities going, but actually connect with real world people and activities in order to get you guys the experience to try to sort out like, yeah, I'm interested in this, I'm not interested in this. I kind of, I tried that for 6 weeks, didn't dig it. I'm going to go a different route. So like just try to start to sort through that thing.
Next question is, how can MBK have a bigger impact?
So I think, bigger impact. I think the biggest piece is from, I like to dream big, right? So like I think it really is about kind of uniting the communities and the resources from the different communities, building partnerships with companies, within the New York State, if you just start with New York State, My Brother's Keeper, just Long Island, My Brother's Keeper, like building partnerships with companies where students could do internships and get jobs over the summer not only while they're in high school, but also in college. And I think building those supports up through college is another aspect of My Brother's Keeper that I think would be really, really powerful, that students that are enrolled in colleges, if you're a member of My Brother's Keeper while you're in high school, that you get followed through college. And there's a layer of support and mentorship that happens in college that when you're dealing with issues, you know, you have regular check-ins with a counselor, with a mentor that can help you to guide you in your decision-making around things about whether you're struggling with a class or whether you're struggling about whether you should stay in school, you're struggling with a change of major, that sort of thing. But to provide another resource that's known to you and somebody that can follow you through 4 years of postgraduate education in order to, you know, just bring that, make sure that those supports are there and the support structure and the web that I spoke about before is there in order to help support and catch you if needed on your journey, because we all need that in different ways. But I think it's really powerful when you have an organization like this that has mentors that are connected into different different industries that could really help to kind of make sure that we're following through on our promise to get more young men of color into powerful positions within society and in positions where they can live the life that they would like.
Thank you. And are there any challenges, limitations, barriers that your local MBK right now is not capable of solving?
There's never enough money or resources. So I think that part, I think we could solve that, but it's just, you know, convincing people that we need more money in order to do it. I think that you know, spending the money in the right way in order to get it done. But I think that, you know, there's always a way to do things. It's just a matter of whether people decide to put more money into it or not. So I think that's one, and just trying to convince some folks that needs to happen quick, more quickly than it's happening right now. I think that, you know, I think there's implicit bias and different things that people hold in their hearts that is hard to overcome, but can be worn down over time, that we're trying to get work through and try to get to. Yeah, I would say that those are the biggest ones.
And can MBK work to solve these problems in terms of improving education opportunities for young men of color?
Say this again.
So can MBK work to solve those problems in terms of improving educational opportunities for young men of color?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's kind of what we're doing. And I think that it's just a matter of getting the resources in place in order to make it happen. So right now you have one advisor, Mr. Agoro, but then also, you know, everybody else is really volunteering their time. So it's like if we really wanted to tackle this stuff, like creating a couple positions that were dedicated to this, I think would be really powerful. And then, like I said, like making the connections with the network of people that could help support kids all the way through college is another really meaningful piece as well. So I think that it's just about, they absolutely could, it's just a matter of getting it done.
Okay, thank you. The last mm-hmm. and final question we have here is there anything that we didn't ask but we should have?
Nothing stands out. I mean, I think that was pretty thorough. I think one other thing I would add is teaching students. One thing that we need to work on is teaching students how to have their voices heard politically. So as public institutions, we're supposed to be not anti-political. We're supposed to be apolitical, meaning like not choose sides. But I think teaching the way to be civically engaged And to contact your local representatives and your senators and that sort of thing is really, really important, even more so now than, I wouldn't say, I guess I shouldn't say that, it's always been important. But the, you know, I think it's really something that we need to teach students how to do and advocate. And I think this, that part is something that I think I would like to see too, of how can we get students more involved with getting in the room and a seat at the table in order to have discussions with politicians about what policies should be put in place. Okay. So I think that's one line of questioning. I think that I guess I could put it into some of the answers, but I think that part is another place of like, how does MPK lobby for resources at that level, and how do we make an imprint and make sure that young men of color's voices are being heard? So I think that would be one thing. But other than that, I think you guys covered a lot.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. This concludes the interview. Thanks for being on with us. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Good work. How's it going overall?
It's good.
Yeah. All right.
Are you enjoying it? Or?
When we were talking to Mr. A yesterday, we were talking about, so he talked about like students getting kind of like the academic curriculum, how there's not enough like black teachers and stuff.
Yeah.
So we were talking about yesterday how if we could build like a teacher curricular, like for students, like in the school, like class almost, like African diaspora, right?
Right.
Is that, if we could build like a, especially in Elmont where it's like mostly diverse, you know, it's a diverse school with kids. So being able to build the curricular to like improve like the percentage of black teachers, even just kids interested in teaching, and we just like build curriculum on top of that, I think that'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. I would like that a lot, like a future teachers type thing.
Yeah, and it could be like an elective or something, or anything
yeah.
we want to take.
No, that would be super cool.
Yeah.
All right. No, that would be super cool. We'll work on that.
All right. Well.
All right. Awesome, guys. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right. Later.
Bye.
Later.